So as we deal with the subject of prophecy, then the question is, how do you put together a timeline? So what we're going to go through is to try to put together a timeline of end time prophecy. And the challenge that we face in trying to put together such a timeline is putting the different elements together in a way that fits. So you have to plug in things. So we can find elements, but we have to then discern where they fit in. You find these different elements of prophecy. Well, how do they fit in? And we're not told necessarily where those elements fit. And when it doesn't tell you, then what do we have to resort to? We have to resort to speculation. And as you think about speculation, speculation is just that. It's a 50-50. Did we get it right or not? Maybe we got it altogether wrong. So it's kind of like a flip of the coin. So we have to be careful about speculation. So if you have some timeline features that you can look at, the goal is see if we can build something that fits and makes sense. So as we look at these elements, we can see that some of them are set, and something, it's set, and from this proceeds something else, and you can build around them. With, so we'll seek to do that. So we're gonna take a look, begin in the book of Daniel, and we're gonna begin in Daniel chapter 12. So we'll look at Daniel 12. We'll see what God told Daniel in chapter 12, and look at some of the things that he points out, and then we'll go on from there and seek to build these elements into a coherent pattern. So let's begin in Daniel chapter 12, verse 1. Daniel chapter 12, verse 1. There it says, "At that time shall stand up the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time." So Michael is an archangel. He works in God's service, and he's going to stand up, and he's a vital part of what is revealed here. It says, "And at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book." And then in verse 2, and many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life and some to everlasting shame. So I think we know who those who are in the dust and will awake. We know that those are the saints. And it says, "Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament. And those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever." I've always, when I see the word firmament, it's a little vague in my mind what it is, but I just looked it up, and it's the brightness of the sky above, or complete Jewish Bible has it as the brightness of heaven's dome. You know, you look up and you see a dome in the sky. So I thought that was an interesting way of putting it. But the first three verses of Daniel 12 are a summarization of the end of the age. And they talk about the resurrection of the dead. And who is being talked about there? Well, it's talking about the people who rise from the dust of the earth. So they are in the grave, they're sleeping, and they will be resurrected. It talks about those who awake to everlasting life. They've been sleeping, and they awake to everlasting life. And they will shine like the stars forever and ever. So we don't shine like that, but the saints will as they are resurrected in the future. So as we look at those things, we see that those have to fit in with the return of Jesus Christ and the resurrection of the dead. God then says, we're finished. In Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, it says, "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book. Until the time of the end, many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase." So I think we live in that time when people are going to and fro, and we do live at the end of the age. Have we started the unfolding of what we described in the sermon? I think that's yet to come. As you look at this, what follows is interesting. God has revealed certain matters to Daniel. And when Daniel doesn't understand, what does he do? He says, what does that mean? And God's explained it to him, which is good for us because Daniel understands and we can understand. But as you look at what's taking place here in Daniel chapter 12, he doesn't answer his question. You know, Daniel doesn't get it all. Let's look at Daniel chapter 12, verse 5. Daniel 12, verse 5, it says, "Then I, Daniel, looked, and there stood two others, one on this river bank and one on the other." So you have the archangel Michael, and you have these two other angels, one on each river bank. And verse 6, it says, "And one said to the man clothed in linen," and that would be the archangel Michael, "who is above the waters of the river, how long shall the fulfillment of these wonders be?" So how long are we looking at? So this question is posed by one of the angels on the riverbank, and Daniel is allowed to watch this interaction between these angels and Michael. And Peter mentions that angels are interesting because guess what they want to look into? They're interested in prophecy. They don't know exactly how it's all going to play out. And like it says in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 12, we won't go there, but it talks about things which angels desire to look into. They're interested. They want to know, and they don't exactly know all the answers. So let's go to Daniel chapter 12, verse 7. There it says, "Then I heard the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river when he held his right hand and his left hand to heaven and swore by him who lives forever that it shall be for a time, times, and half a time." Now, this is a time period that's pretty concrete. This is not the only place where it's mentioned, as we'll see. So he holds his hands up and swears by him who lives forever. And then he goes on and he mentions the time and times and half a time. And that is a very concrete period of time. And it says, "How long shall the fulfillment of these things be?" And he gave us a little bit to work with, you know, as we are trying to put all this together, because the time and times and half a time, those are, you know, 3.5 years, that's a concrete period. And it says, "And when the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, all these things shall be finished." So who are the holy people? Well, I would think that they are the people in the church. The saints are the holy people. And so something's going to happen where they will be shattered, and then it says all these things shall be completed. It's all going to be, all things shall be finished. So as God is bringing this out, you know, he lays this groundwork. And as you think about the book of Daniel, who is the book of Daniel primarily about? It's not about the church. It's about the nation of Judah in the context. It points to the church, but it's about the nation of Judah. So just as in the first verse where it had, "Michael is the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people," that's talking about Judah and Israel. Michael has stood up for them. The children of Israel is who he's talking about. But in the New Testament context, who would that be? It would be the church. Because as Christ died and established the church, then going forward, the people of God would be the church. So the issue is the time at which God feels that the children of Israel have been completely shattered. So when is that going to be? It's something that's to happen, but what does that mean? As you think about it, is it a physical shattering? Is it a frame of mind or a combination of both? What's exactly going to take place that would bring about a shattering? It will be 3.5 years from the time that he begins the process. And fundamentally, to use our terms, we would like to say the captivity or the great tribulation. That's when the physical people for sure are going to be shattered. And, you know, as they're shattered, I would say that at the end of that, they're going to be quite humble. They're going to be quite pliable. They're going to be quite willing to listen to God, and which they may not be in this age. We don't see a lot of that with Israel at this point. And in that 3.5 year period, what will be sorted out are those who will not refuse to, who will not, are not willing to, in any way, shape, or form to go where God wants them to go. So they'll be, God's going to impact them and then make the changes necessary. As you're thinking about a situation where somebody in the Bible was shattered, just look at David. David, we know, sinned against God in his involvement in adultery with Bathsheba. We know that he was going about his business, going on as if nothing had happened, until Nathan showed up and said, "Hey, we need to talk," and he talks to him and he tells him what he's doing. And at that point, then David was shattered. And he humbled himself before God. And we have Psalm 51 as an indication of his repentance. And, you know, he was indicted, and he was willing to repent of it. And so I would say that, in a sense, spiritually speaking, that David was shattered by that confrontation with Nathan. The lead statement in Daniel 12, verse 1, it says, "There shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation even to that time." Now, and the angel on the bank said, "How long shall the fulfillment of these wonders be? How long will it be till these things are fulfilled?" And one of the things that is described by Michael that he's asking about is a time such as never was nor shall be. So what time is that? Jesus Christ, when his disciples asked about the signs of the end of the age, what did Jesus Christ say? He told them the same thing, that something's coming that is going to be so terrible it's never happened before and won't happen again. And Christ mentions that in Matthew chapter 24, verse 21. And he tells the disciples there will be great tribulation, such as has not been before, nor will be again. And he said if this didn't come to a halt, there would be no flesh saved alive. So whatever this is going to be terrible. So what Daniel is describing in Daniel 12, verse 1, Jesus Christ is repeating as the answer to the disciples' question, what will be the signs of the end of the age and of your coming? So he's mentioning this in answering that question. As you think about this question being answered, we see that in Luke chapter 21, Luke is a little bit more graphic in what he lays out. Luke chapter 21, verse 20. Luke chapter 21, verse 20. So he adds an element that you don't find in the book of Matthew. It says in verse 20, "But when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near." So it talks about a desolation taking place, and here are these armies surrounding the city of Jerusalem. And what does it say in verse 21? It says, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are in the midst of her depart, and let those who are in the country, not those who are in the country, enter her. So if you're in the town, get out. And if you're not in the town, don't go in there. Verse 22, and these are the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days, for there will be great distress in the land and wrath upon this people. And they will fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. So here's Christ's response to the disciples' question and about the end of the age from the book of Luke. So he's answering the same question, but you get a few more details in the book of Luke. Now let's go to Revelation chapter 12. Revelation chapter 12, which also talks about this and gives us a little bit more information. Now, as you look at Revelation chapter 12, you know, and you think about our education in the scriptures, you know, we've learned over the years that when it talks about a mountain, it represents a nation. When it talks about hills, it's talking about a nation, but a smaller nation. If you talk about a woman, what is a woman symbolic of? The church. And what about a scarlet woman? That's talking about a church, but one that isn't God's church. It's got, it's not of God. What about the serpent? Who is the serpent talking about? We know that from Genesis chapter 3. We know that that's talking about Satan. And these symbols were Old Testament symbols, but they come forward into the New. Now, let's go to Revelation chapter 12, and let's look at verse 13. Revelation 12, verse 13. And as we look at what's described here in Revelation chapter 12, it gives us some information that helps us to understand what's being represented. Let's begin in verse 3. It says, and another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great fiery red dragon. We know who that is. That's Satan. Having seven heads and ten horns, seven diadems on his head, and his tail drew a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman who was ready to give birth to devour her child as soon as it was born. So we know that's the child is Christ, and we know the dragon is Satan, and we know that the dragon was determined to destroy the Christ child, did his very best, didn't achieve that, but that was his goal. So we have this woman who has a connection with Christ, and not a fallen woman or scarlet woman. And in the Bible, we find that the church is portrayed in a marriage relationship. Israel was God's bride, and it mentions that. And as you look at the church, you know, Paul tells us that we are married to another. We are married to another. That would be Christ. Now let's go to verse 13, Revelation chapter 12, verse 13. And there it says, now when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. So this seems to be telling us that there is coming a point where Satan is going to be cast to the earth. God is going to say, okay, your causing trouble is coming to an end. You're going to be cast down to the earth. And so he says that, and for what happens with the woman, but the woman was given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time, from the presence of the serpent. So the serpent is trying to destroy the woman. And God intervenes and protects the woman from the serpent. So that is a reference to the church. And it talks about she goes into the wilderness to her place. Now, our feeling has been that the church has a place, to her place. I'm not sure where it is. I don't think we know where it is at this point exactly. We've speculated that it might be in the Middle East there, that it might be Petra, but we spent a lot of time speculating about that, but I'm not sure that's the place. But if God says she goes to her place, I think you can be pretty well assured that there is a place God is going to take her. We're not going to heaven. We're not going to be up there and be raptured or whatever. That's not what fits with the Bible. But she's going to be protected. For how long? For time, times, and half a time from the presence of the serpent. So the woman, the church, is going to be protected by God and is going to survive Satan's efforts to destroy her. Let's look at verse 15. Revelation chapter 12, verse 15. It says, "So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood." So Satan is going to seek to destroy the church, and God is going to protect the church, where this flood, an army or whatever it is not going to wipe out the church. Verse 16, "And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth." So Satan's effort is thwarted. So he is enraged by being thwarted. And what does he do then? Now, what's interesting is there's an element here that is protected and taken to a place where they're protected. And they're going to be there for 3.5 years. But Satan's enraged, and we learn it as we come to the end of this verse here in verse 17. Satan's enraged, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So these people keep the commandments of God, and they also have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So they are God's church, but for some reason, they are going to suffer persecution from Satan. Now, why does one group that we would see as the church flee and they're protected and they go to a place where they're protected and these others aren't protected? How is there a distinction between the two? Well, so the woman is offered protection from the dragon, and that protection is for the same chronological amount of time, 3.5 years. The serpent desires to destroy the woman with the flood of his mouth, but is thwarted, and he then makes war with the additional portions of those who make up the church. So they keep the commandments, and they have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So this is the picture we have, and how do we discern between one group and the other group? Well, we don't have any specific, we have to go by what's in the Bible in order to make a decision. So let's go to Revelation chapter 3. Let's go to Revelation chapter 3. And as you look at the scriptures and you look at what it's talking about here, it talks about the seven churches. Christ speaks to them in Revelation 2 and 3. And then as we are coming to the last two, then it's interesting what it says about them. As you look at the Philadelphia church, God said that you've persevered in Revelation 3, verse 10, I also will keep you from the hour of trial, which is to come on the whole world, the time of tribulation, to test those who dwell on the earth. So we see that one of the churches that's associated with Philadelphia has persevered through the difficulties, and God protects her. And he has a very positive message for Philadelphia. And then we come to Laodicea, and God does not have a positive message for them. In Revelation chapter 3, verse 17, it says, because you say, I am rich, and have become wealthy and have need of nothing. So Christ is not speaking about money. He's assessing them. So I've looked at you, and you think I'm golden. I'm on solid ground. Everything is good. That's their self-assessment. But God said, you're not exactly seeing yourself accurately. So Christ tells them that they are, the only thing you could say is they're deluded. They do not see themselves accurately. And so they think they're in fine shape, but he said, actually, you're wretched, you're miserable, you're poor, blind, and naked. And so they're in a pretty sorry condition, which they don't recognize. And he said, because of that condition, my counsel is that you would buy gold tried in the fire, and that you would seek to be clothed with white raiment. That's the raiment God wants you to wear. That's the raiment that you'll wear to the wedding supper. And not be ashamed and naked at the time that I return to the earth. So I'm coming back, but you need to get your act together, because you guys aren't together. You don't have it together. So the statements that are made in Revelation chapter 12, verses 13 and 14, about the woman and the period of time where she's going to be sheltered, is because she has persevered and there is nothing to prove. God doesn't need to prove her. She's proven herself by the way that she's lived. But when you look at the other group, they haven't proven themselves, so therefore God is going to have to try them to find out where they're at. You know, do you really believe the scriptures? Are you really dedicated to my way of life? So I'm going to have to put you through some trials here. So there's a group that we would associate with the church that's going to be tried, and there's a group that aren't going to be tried because in their lives they have persevered and proven that they're faithful. So God is going to allow them to, this one group to be tried, the other group is going to be protected. So the question always exists when we look at these two, and we'll add more to it, are they exactly in alignment? In that they're both, what's described about them, is it going to encompass the same amount of time? So Philadelphia and the Laodicea are in the same period of time. So it doesn't tell us that exactly. We don't know that that's exactly the truth, that they are both aligned exactly. That's something that will come along. Will one be around a little bit longer than the other? We'll see. But they are going to be tried. One's going to be in a place of safety for 3.5 years, and the other one is going to go through a period of trials. That's 3.5 years of trials. Now let's go to Revelation chapter 11. Revelation chapter 11. This is a chapter where we find some specific time frame. And we see that period of time that's already been mentioned. Revelation chapter 11, verse 1. Revelation chapter 11, verse 1. And it's talking about measuring. It says, rise and measure the temple of God, which could be the church. We are the temple individually and collectively. the altar and those who worship there. But leave out the court, which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to the Gentiles. And they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. How long is 42 months? 3.5 years. Same period of time, just referred to a little bit differently. And I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days. So again, we have this period of 42 months, 1,260 days, 3.5 years. They're all referring to the same period of time. So it talks about the two witnesses, and they're going to be prophesying during that 3.5 year period. So is all of this going on at the same time? Is it referring to the same 3.5 year period? They may not line up exactly, but is it referring to the same? So as you look at the two witnesses and you look at what happens to them, they're going to prophesy for 3.5 years. God sent them out, and they're going to prophesy, and it says they're going to be prophesying in the city of Jerusalem, that it's that city called Sodom in Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified, so that tends to line up with it being Jerusalem. And then it says in verse 9, then those from the peoples, tribes, tongues, and nations will see their dead bodies. So these two men, known as the two witnesses, are going to be killed. And they're going to be hated, and they're going to be doing God's work. But when God's work is done, they're going to be killed. And it has to be, it couldn't have happened at any time before television or satellite. It has to be an end time event, because you couldn't have seen them. You know, it says everybody sees them lying in the street and they're all rejoicing. You couldn't have seen them. You know, in the 1500s, sorry, there were no satellites. There were no cameras. There was none of that. So until our age, that couldn't have happened. But because of technology being applied, then you're going to be able to see them. And it says they're going to be lying in the street 3.5 days and not allow their dead bodies to be put in the grave. So these guys are hated. So they're killed. Everybody's, yay, they killed those guys. They've been nothing but trouble. So everybody's going to rejoice. Finally, they're dead. Finally, out of our hair. And what happens then? So they're laying there in the street. We're not going to bury them. We have no respect for them whatsoever. So what happens? It says that they didn't allow them to be buried. So as you think about this, before we give you the answer to my question, consider the time periods that we've mentioned so far. 42 months. We've mentioned time, times, and half a time. We've mentioned 3.5 days. And we can get in, you know, and when it talks about the 3.5 days, is that symbolic of something? I don't think necessarily that's so. But we, you know, does it symbolize something? It doesn't necessarily say that it is. And so is the 3.5 days figurative? It doesn't apply right away. It's just figurative. Well, it can't be figurative, because just realize they were executed. They're lying in the street. So if you go 3.5 days into the future, what's going to happen? They're going to be rotting, bloated. It's going to be ugly. So it can't be talking about 3.5 years or a day for a year kind of thing. It's 3.5 days. And then something's going to happen. Let's begin in chapter 11, verse 10. Chapter 11, verse 10. It says, and those who dwell on the earth will rejoice over them. Make merry and send gifts to one another. And these two prophets tormented those who dwell on the earth. So, and then verse 11. It says, Now after 3.5 days, the breath of life from God entered them. And they stood on their feet, and great fear fell on those who saw them. So they knew. It's been made clear all around the world that these two guys have been killed. They've been lying in the street. Everybody's rejoicing over this. They know they're dead. And then, suddenly, they're standing on their feet once again. So, what's happening here? It says in verse 12, and they heard a loud voice from heaven saying to them, consider what happens when it talks about the resurrection. Doesn't it talk about a shout? And it says here, and they heard a loud voice from heaven saying to them, come up here. Is there a shout that's taking place? And they ascended to heaven in a cloud, and their enemies saw them. So here are these two guys they know are dead. They're raised to life, and they rise in the air. So who are they going to meet in the air? Is there going to be anybody else rising in the air at the same time? I would say that's likely. It doesn't talk about that there, you know, at the end of the age, there's going to be several different resurrections. There's one. And if they were dead, everybody knew they were dead, and this takes place, this is the first resurrection. They are saints of God. They're going to be resurrected, and they're going to rise to meet Christ in the air. And they're going to meet there. They're going to be up there with Paul and Peter and all these other people that have been faithful to God throughout the ages. They're going to rise. They're going to meet him in the air. And what are they going to do? They're not going to heaven. That sky above us up there that we see that's blue, that dome is as far as they're going to go. And they're going to come back down on the Mount of Olives. And they're going to accompany Jesus Christ into crossing the Kidron Valley, as I said, and they will be with Christ as he assumes his throne on Mount Zion. So they're going to be resurrected. They're going to rise in the air. And so this is an event that we're told in verse 14, the second woe is past. Behold, the third woe is coming quickly. So this event, it says the second woe is past, and this event is the culminating event, and then it talks about the third woe. So these two men are going to preach and share God's truth for 3.5 years. They will be killed, and then they're going to be resurrected. So as you think about that, think about this. Let's think about this timeline marker as we've looked at it so far. It's interesting as we look at this in several different ways. It does tell us the end marker, which is the coming of Christ, the sounding of the seventh trump. With the first 3.5 years in Daniel chapter 12, as I said, we can see this is the Great Tribulation. 3.5 years, it says. In the tribulation, the power of the holy people will be completely shattered. And then it goes on to say, with the second 3.5 years, the woman, the church, is promised safety. And it's reasonable to assume that it fits as an overlay on top of the same period, you know. So we see 3.5 years and something else going on in that 3.5 years, and it would make sense that one, they're going on at the same time. They're not, you know, 3.5 years and then another 3.5 years. It's all going on at the same time. So if the purpose of the first 3.5 years in Daniel 12 is to shatter the holy people, and the woman is taken to a place of safety because she doesn't need to be shattered, she's already proven herself, The other group that wasn't as dedicated, they're going to have to be proven, and there seems to be two events happening at the same time. That's a reasonable assumption. With the two witnesses, the appearance is that their work may begin slightly later, and the rhetorical question is why I would say that. Well, the answer lies in Revelation 11, verse 14. Revelation 11, verse 14, where it says, "The second woe is past. Behold, the third woe is coming quickly." So as you think about this and reason it through, if the two witnesses rising after 3.5 days in the streets of Jerusalem marks the end of the second woe, okay, those are things that were given in the scriptures. We are already well into the day of the Lord. The tribulation period has ended in terms of the sixth seal. The heavenly signs have followed. The seventh seal has opened, and the first woe is over. The second woe is concluding, and the third woe is about to start. So you may be thinking, okay, that's just a lot of words and doesn't register for me, but you might go back and listen to it again. So there seems to be a slightly later starting point for the 3.5 years that are described as a period the two witnesses will prophesy. It may start a little bit later. So we have three 3.5 year periods described. And as I said, the first two, there's a high probability that they're going on at the same time when they're talking about the church. One being protected, one suffering through the tribulation. With the third, there is a possibility that it will start slightly later than the others. It'll still be 3.5 years, but they don't totally, one doesn't overlap the other. So let's look at another thing here, introduce another thing. Let's go to Daniel chapter 8. Daniel chapter 8. And in Daniel chapter 8, let's look at verse 9. Daniel chapter 8, verse 9. And this talks about some others that will be involved here at the end of the age. It says, "And out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land. And it grew up to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. He even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host." Now, you know, the word there is capitalized, prince, and by him the daily sacrifices were taken away, and by his sanctuary was cast down. So his sanctuary, the word there is capitalized, so it's felt to refer to Jesus Christ. So we have a little horn here who is described as exalting himself against the prince of the host. As I said, it's a capital P, and that would be Christ. And by him, the little horn, the daily sacrifices were taken away. So we see the cessation of the daily sacrifices. So think about it for a second. Are the sacrifices going on today? I don't see any. But obviously, if this is to play out, then at some point in time, the sacrifices are going to have to start again. When? How? I don't know. But it would seem that they will be going, and then they're going to have to be going in order to stop. So, and then as you look at it, it goes on to say, and the place of his, and it's a capital H, Jesus Christ, the sanctuary was cast down. Chapter 8, verse 12, "Because of the transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices, and he cast truth down to the ground. He did all this and prospered." So It says, because of transgression, this is all going to take place, and they're going to cast the truth to the ground. And he did all of this, and it seems like everything's going to go well for him. Verse 13, then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to that certain one who was speaking, and these are angels, how long will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifices and the transgression of desolation? So what does that sound like? The transgression of desolation. Doesn't that sound like the abomination of desolation? The giving of both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot. So I would say that, you know, when the abomination of desolation is set up, which it's supposed to be, then you know that there are going to be some bad times. So we have these angels speaking, and notice it says the transgression of desolation. As I said, that sure sounds like the abomination of desolation. Then let's look at verse 14. And he said to me, for 2,300 days when the sanctuary shall be cleansed. So as you think about the 2,300 days, what's that talking about? So you're interjecting another time period, 2,300 days. And there's a long form of explaining this. We're not going to go there. We're just going to give you the summary explanation. So verse 23 is important, and it gives us a time frame. And when people look at this, they tend to put it back in the time of Antiochus Epiphanes and the Maccabean revolt against Antiochus Epiphanes. And that took place in type, but it's referring to the end of the age. There may be some human being who's like Antiochus Epiphanes, but it won't be Antiochus Epiphanes. So we're talking about a time when we reach the fullness of transgression and the latter days. So this is not something that dates back to 200 or 300 BC. This is an end time event. And when you think about the fullness of the transgression, what's it talking about there? Anybody remember back in Genesis where it talks about the fullness of transgression? Go back to the time of Abraham and the vision that God gave Abraham. And he talks about they're going to be enslaved. And God said, when the transgression of the Amorites is full or complete, then your descendants are going to return to the land of promise. That's when you'll be given this. So it's talking about the, you know, in Abraham's time, the iniquity of the Amorites. And here it's talking about the fullness of transgression. It gives us a way that we can understand what this is talking about. 2300 is once more described as this whole vision finishes, and it says we've been talking about is this. In verse 26, Daniel 8, verse 26, it says, And the vision of the evenings and mornings which was told is true. Therefore, seal up the vision, for it refers to many days in the future. The 2,300 days is referring to evenings and mornings. 2,300 evenings and mornings. That would be 1,150 days. 1,150 days. And so as you look at the sacrificial system, there were two sacrifices given each day, a morning sacrifice and an afternoon sacrifice. So he's giving a vision referring to those 2,300 sacrifices. And evening and morning, that would mean there were 1,150 days these sacrifices are given. So this is an end time event. And it's another one of those end-time events that deals with the trampling of Jerusalem, the cessation of sacrifices and tribulation upon those who are resident in the city of Jerusalem. So as you think about the 2,300 days, it's 1,150 days, or 110 days short of 1,260 days. So it doesn't add up to that time period. So what does it mean? All we can do is speculate. And so we don't know exactly. So one of the appearances that it may give us is that if indeed the two witnesses, 3.5 year period ends at the end of the second woe, then it may not start until the time, times, and half a time are already in motion. That's possible, but we don't know. So exactly what the 1,150 days means, we don't have an exact understanding of that. So if you see sacrifices established in Jerusalem and you see that they're stopped, then you can start counting and count 1150, and you'll probably get someplace with some significance, but we don't know exactly what that's all about. And we'll have to wait. We'll have to wait. So as you look at what's unfolding here, it's quite interesting what's going on, and they all relate together. So let's go to another thought here. As you're probably aware, as you read through Revelation, the captivity is preceded by some horrific times on their own. We talk about the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and we talked about Israel going into captivity. So, as I said, is this going to happen? When you have 330 million people, that's a lot of people. So is the United States and the other nations descended from Jacob, are they going to go into captivity? That's a lot of people. So something's going to have to happen to thin them out, if that's going to happen in a way that is reasonable, where they're going to be carried away captive. So we'll see if that plays out. And the Bible refers to it and talks about, as you think about the tribulation and going into captivity, that's one thing we don't exactly know about. But how will it happen? So as you think about, you look at World War II and all of the death and destruction, they thinned a lot of people out during that period of time. And it was a horrible time. And so something horrible is going to have to take place that will thin out the population. One more thing. The last one is an area that all you can do is speculate. So we'll end with speculation. When the book of Daniel ends, it is winding down when the archangel Michael is standing hovering over the river, and two angels, one on each bank, are with him. And one says to them says to Michael, "Explain all of this to me. How long will the fulfillment of these wonders be?" And Michael swears by God in heaven with his hands raised that it will be 3.5 years. And Daniel was a bystander there. And as I said, Daniel asked God, "Well, what does this mean?" And God told him a number of different times. So Daniel wants to know. He said, I'm seeing this, hearing this, but I don't know what it means. And so Daniel asked the question in chapter 12 of Daniel, verse 9. He said, "Go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days." 1,290 days. So, what does that mean? Blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1,335 days. So here you've got 1260, you've got 1290, you've got 1335. And Daniel's asked, well, what's the answer to all this? And God doesn't tell him. God doesn't tell him. He doesn't tell Daniel everything, even though Daniel wants to know. So God does not answer his question, and he doesn't give us all the information. The main thing that we have to keep in mind, again, is that all of this is all going to work out, and we can have a certain understanding of different aspects of this, but there are things we won't understand. And what did God tell Daniel? And it's the same statement that applies to all of us in Daniel chapter 12, verse 13. It says, but you go your way till the end, for you shall rest and will arise in your inheritance at the end of the days. So we may not know everything, but even though our life passes away, we're dead, we're in the grave, but it's all going to work out. So as I said, it's interesting. We can understand certain things, and as we get closer to the end, will God reveal things to us? Could. And as we well know, God said the secret things God reveals to his servants, the prophets. So God will clue us in, and what we need to know, we'll be able to know. So, you know, prophecies, as you can see, it's some parts of it are pretty clear. Other parts of it, I don't know. It's a little bit confusing, and we don't have all the answers. And as we walk humbly before God, God will see us through. And I know that when in certain things that have happened in my time, we didn't know what was going on. We didn't know the answer. It was very frustrating. But God was merciful, and we got through it. On the other side, we got through it, and we'll get through whatever plays out, prophetically speaking. We may not know everything, and I'm not worried about being quizzed on that. The big worry is, will I have that relationship with God all the way through to where I stand before him? He'll say, I know you. I know Gary Smith, and I think we'll all want to hear our name. Yep, I know that guy. I know her. I've had a relationship with her for years. And God will know you, and we will know God, and we'll be a part of his family forever. So thanks again for your attention. Some of this is involved. Like my wife said, man, that was a lot of information. Or Liz said, it's a lot of information. It was sure long. So for some people it was. But hopefully it'll be profitable. And if you need, you can download the sermon if you want to listen again. And so thanks for your attention. Please have a safe journey home.